Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Steward's Office. I'm Syra, and today we have a very special guest with us. We have Rachel from Accessible Racing Life on Instagram, and I am super excited to have you here today.
Hello, how are you? Good morning. I should say good evening, but it's good
I
morning from me.
know it's 6:30 there. It's about 8:30 in Britain, so a little bit chaotic to get this one sorted and recorded, but super excited to have you on here today. So for today's episode, we are going to have a chat with Rachel about accessibility in motorsport. It's a lot of what she covers on her Instagram page. It's super interesting and super important, the information and news that she's giving out. And then we are going to have a chat about the Australian Grand Prix, which Rachel attended. So I'm super excited to hear what she has to tell us about all of that. So, should we kick off?
Yeah, absolutely. Let's do it.
So, really curious how and why you started up your Instagram. What was the journey into motorsport? And then, yeah, the want to really promote accessibility in motorsport as well.
Yeah, sure. So basically, I'm a longtime motorsport fan, particularly F1. It basically stemmed from having been diagnosed with a rare disease. It's quite painful. Being rare,
Yeah.
it's like one in 250,000 people have this.
Oh,
So
wow.
there was not a lot known about it. So when I was young, it was always late nights, in a lot of pain, couldn't
Yeah.
sleep a lot. And being in Australia, Formula One, it's usually 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
So yeah, it kind of stemmed from that. And then as I just went along, my son got into motorsport as he got older, and we went to the Grand Prix a few years ago, and it just sort of clicked with me that even though they have all of these accessible options, the information wasn't out there. And I just thought,
Yeah.
I need to get this page up and running to let people know so that they know information is accessible to them, that, they can attend these events and have the same experience that everybody else does.
Yeah, and I love that because I started following you probably around when I started my Instagram page in the steward's office and everything. And I think what you're saying is right, is that I didn't even know about the accessibility side of motorsport. The information isn't really readily available. So the fact that when I see your post, I'm like, oh, it's wonderful that like the Australian GP are doing XYZ, because if you don't know about it, people who need that accessibility, they're going to think, oh, well, I can't go to a Grand Prix then.
That's right. That's exactly right. And a lot of the times people with disability don't want to go to the event is because, transport, for example, is a
Yeah.
major issue for them. Like not knowing that they can get on a tram that will take them right to, gate one, which has accessible access into the event. It's they
Yeah.
just don't know that these things are available to them. And, they're quite often scared. It can be embarrassing not knowing how to navigate how to get there. So yeah, I just love the idea of getting that information out there, but also being consistent in the way that we do that.
Yeah, no, definitely. So, from your point of view, as a fan who would needs the accessibility in motorsport, what do you think fans need more of right now when you're going to motorsport events? What are we lacking?
It's kind of two parts. So I like to break it down into two parts. The main message that I think I want to get across today is that we need consistent messaging when it comes to this information. It's great to say, we have these options, but when you're not consistently following through with these options, that makes it so much harder. So that's part one. And I think part two is that we actually need options that, like Australian Grand Prix, for example, over 100,000 people, on the Friday, Melbourne Walk, it was like just all this space, all this time given to able-bodied people. And I'm not saying that's a bad thing, they deserve that too.
No, I know what you
But
mean, though. Yeah.
physically, the spaces that they have there, they just need to be adapted to cater for people with a disability. That's
Yeah.
the thing I think we need most.
And I think I remember seeing your Instagram post on it and about the limited space specifically on Melbourne Walk. And I was like, for me, that doesn't make sense because, say, you're a wheelchair user, sometimes wheelchairs can be quite bulky. So that might take up a fair
That's
bit of
right.
room. So that means you're limiting
That's
space
right.
for other people. So yeah, it doesn't
Exactly.
make sense.
Exactly. And I mean, in turn, you're then essentially discriminating. When I got there, it was such a shock, like to see this tiny little 2 meter by 2 meter square. and they had said, you know, wheelchair users only. And I actually had a slew of people message me. My inbox just went crazy saying, I got rejected from Melbourne Walk. I got rejected. I'm so disappointed. And it is. It's disappointing. It's really disappointing, Sarah.
Because I think for me, when I watched the Australian Grand Prix, I see all the media. Melbourne Walk is like one of the most exciting parts about it because it's not really something the other GPs have, right? Like you get to
That's
really
right.
have that interaction with the drivers, with the TPs, with other fans. So it doesn't matter who you are as a fan, you should have that option to enjoy it.
And exactly. You know, Melbourne Walk is iconic. And the worst part about it is that when you come through the gates, if you're a person with a disability, you are getting knocked over essentially by, it could be up to 50,000 people racing to get to Melbourne Walk. Like I'm really proud of the fact that we are leading the way GP wise with accessibility, but there's so much that we need to work on for every Grand Prix, not just
No,
Australia.
absolutely. Absolutely. Because I think about it, like for me, when I look at a diversity point of view with like ethnic minorities, I'm like, yeah, the work we're doing is great, but there's always more we can do. We can't accept the bare minimum.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, totally agree with that. We just need to keep building on it. You know, we just need to keep talking about it, making people aware of it. You know, don't be quiet about it is what I say.
I think that kind of leads me on to my next question. Do you think it's gotten better over the last couple of years? You know, do you think, say over the last 5 years, do you think GPs and Australia in particular, because that's where you are, do you think it's gotten better?
I do. Yeah, I absolutely do. In terms of accessibility, yes. And I say that across, you know, every GP. There are going to be some countries, you know, just the culture, the way that they are, they're not going to be readily accessible to people, of course. But I think as a whole, we are doing a better job. And I know that every time we have a Grand Prix and the information comes out, and when, you know, even when we're scouting for that information, it's like, oh, that's good to know that they didn't have that last year, but they have it now. So yeah, I do think we're getting there, but we've got a long way to go.
I think it's like you said, it's about being vocal about it, making that noise, telling the organisers, look, we want this space. We're here and we want to be here and we want that space for us.
That's right. And again, that's where that consistency comes in. It's all well and good to have accessible options, but if you're not following through with them, like I always say, if every single person is not doing what they need to be doing, then it's not accessible.
No, I think that's very, very true. Yeah, because obviously I've seen you post a lot about the AusGP and the run up to Australia. And I've loved seeing the amount of accessibility options they had. And I know, the space, especially with Melbourne and the walk, not great.
No.
Which other GPs do you think are maybe not leading the way per se, but are getting there a bit more compared to some of the others? Which ones do you think are making a bit more of an effort right now?
So I have had some feedback that Silverstone, surprisingly, is actually really good when it comes to accessibility.
Love that for Spritz. That's great.
Yeah, absolutely. I have friends over there. One in particular had a grandfather, low mobility, couldn't really get around, you know, and he said they had general access tickets. So he said to be able to just find a spot, put their chairs there and know that they had that spot there was really great for them. Who else? So we've got Silverstone. So I had a friend recently just come back from Bahrain, and she said it was quite surprising to know that information on the internet was not readily available to English speaking people. But once she got there, she was so surprised to see that they actually did have quite a lot of accessibility options. They had like shuttle buses. They had, they had like a map that showed all the accessibility options on the track. So that was quite surprising to know that Bahrain is doing a really good job too.
You just wish they had that information for English speakers on their website, which is available for you guys.
I know Circuit of the Americas are doing a really good job. I know that they have quite a lot of accessibility options too. But again, like They do have these really great accessibility options, but getting from A to B, we still need to figure these sort of things out. I had, again, another friend who gave me some feedback and said, while it's great that they have these options, the path that they had to get to these options, they're like,
Not
it
easy.
was hard for me as an able-bodied person to traverse. How does somebody in a wheelchair then do that? So.
Yeah, because I was going to say, like, we see the photos from GPs, we see them on screens, like on the TV, and there are so many people there. Like, you see it when people are flooding the tracks. I know Australia had banned that this year, but when people have flooded the tracks, like, how many people are there? And yeah, there need to be easier routes, like you said, to get from A to B comfortably without getting trampled on and just knowing where
Yeah,
you can
exactly.
go.
And it's things like if gates open at 8:30 a.m., you let people with a disability in 15 minutes early. That's not giving them any advantage over able-bodied
No.
people. In the 15 minutes that they've
Oh my
got to get
gosh.
through the gates to get to where they're going, they're not even going to get halfway there, essentially. So,
I was gonna say, they haven't thought about this, have they? Like,
no,
15 minutes
they haven't.
as an able-bodied
And it's,
person would not be enough, right? If I don't know where I'm
no,
going as well.
exactly.
That's
Yeah,
crazy.
and I think it's just you really need to listen to people with a lived experience to be able to, make these changes. And for me, that's not really what they're doing. As a corporation, as FIA, F1, whatever you want to call them, they have their specialists and that's fine. But unless you're listening to like actively taking in feedback and putting that into practice, for me, that's the biggest thing.
Because I was going to say this, right? Like, how many disabled people are actually helping make these choices about the accessibility areas, about the options for people who need them? Because when we watch a GP weekend, when we see the FIA officials, F1 officials, how many disabled people do we actually see?
Not a lot. And to be honest, I'm going to say something that might be controversial, so I apologize in advance. I know in Australia we do have somebody who does have a disability. They are quite renowned, quite famous. They're very well known across the board. And I love that we have that representation. But the thing that bothers me about it is that they're a famous person. They have contacts. They have
It's very
that
different.
respect. That's right. It is like, and okay, so, they're involved in sport and whatnot, but they're not just your everyday run-of-the-mill person with a disability. Like you said, their opportunities are going to be so much different. And I love that they have a team that consults on all of this, but again, it's only that one person. Like, who in their team actually has a lived experience? It just, like I said, I love that we have that representation, but we really need to get back to basics.
No, I don't think that's controversial at all, because I think what a fan's experience is on a race day when you're heading to the track, when you're trying to get around, it's going to be very different from someone who is famous, who might be within the F1 or
Exactly.
FIA ranks, wherever it is. You need to have almost like these sort of groups, like focus groups, right? And you can talk to the fans, ask them about their experience, because that's when you actually get to the bare bones of what people need.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, like you say, with their experience being very different to ours, we actually come back to the problems. Whereas those other people who, they have access to the paddock, they have access to, the Marriott suites, they have access to all the behind the scenes stuff. They're not going to be where we are. They're not going to see our struggles. They're not going to hear our struggles. They're on the glory side of it, whereas we're not. If that makes sense.
No, definitely. It's like, in theory, they think something is going to work, but when you're at the GP and you're struggling to get from A to B, or you're seeing there's not enough space for people, they don't see that. They're just like, oh, but in theory, this is going to be amazing.
That's exactly right. And it's like, we consulted on this. We know that it's good. And I love that they probably, yes, do have, extensive knowledge. And they can put the basic plan into place. But then you need people who have been there, who have experienced it, who know what it's like.
And I think this era that we've got in Formula One now, right, we're adding so many new tracks to the calendar constantly. We're hearing about a new street track. We're hearing about old tracks maybe coming back. I feel like now is the perfect time to talk to fans and be like, what do you need from us?
Exactly. Yep, 100%. I could not agree more. To me, there's not enough consultation. They say, give us some feedback, email us and let us know what what you want, but do they actually really take that into consideration? And then I guess the other thing you've got to think about too is, it's always going to be money when it comes to Formula One.
100%. Yeah, it's a business at the end of the day. And I always say this when I think about certain parts of Formula One, when I've spoken about them, I'm like, I bring it back to it. And I'm like, yeah, it's a business. How do you make the most money?
That's it. Yeah, exactly.
But it's so disappointing because I feel like you are closing off an entire subsection of fans through doing that. And that's a loss in money from them. If they're looking at it just as a business perspective, you're losing money
Yep.
from doing that.
Yeah, exactly. We pay our money, we go to the track.
Yeah.
It
And it's not cheap.
should just, no, it's not. It should just be the norm. Like we shouldn't
Yeah.
have to expect these adaptations be made for us. It should just be, you've paid your money, you're a fan, here you go. Come in,
Go and enjoy.
do what you need to do. Exactly.
Yeah.
That's right.
I think it's disappointing when I hear about it, and I think about the fact that, yeah, we don't really see many officials really being disabled. So how much thought and consideration is being put into it? And it's like you said, they're asking for feedback and emails, but honestly, are they reading every single one?
That's right. That's exactly right. And I was actually quite surprised. Some of the feedback that I gave last year, the reply email that I got from Oz Grand Prix was a bit dismissive. And then this year, all of the accessibility options that they had in place seemed to echo that feedback that I had given. So again, it's disappointing that people with a disability, with a lived experience, give this feedback. And then everything that gets put into place, it's like, they're saying, look what we have done, not look what we have done on the back of what these people have told us.
Yeah, it's like, well, look what we've done as a community. Like, it was a collective effort, not the OSGP
Correct.
just being like, look at all these ideas we came up with by ourselves. Aren't we
Correct.
great?
That's right. Correct. Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, for me, it's just lacking those basic, I don't want to say customer relations, but it is. It's human
Yeah.
relations. You really need to get back to that.
I think it is definitely one of the aspects F1 really, really needs to look into because this isn't new. Accessibility isn't a new problem that's suddenly come up out of
No.
the blue. They have had
Exactly.
years. And I look at the strides they're making with sustainability in Formula One and the things that they're doing in GPs now. You can put that same amount of time and effort into making your GP more accessible for people.
100%, 100%. And it's, like the We Races One campaign and
Yeah.
everything, like you were saying earlier, with they're trying and trying and trying to work on all of these areas, but some of them are just lacking. And like you
Slipping through the
say,
cracks almost.
that's right. They have 12 months. They know, essentially ahead of
100%.
time when the GP is coming on. They have so much time to work on these things.
Yeah.
It's just about priorities, What do you want to put first? Do you want to lose, these diverse groups of fans or to, because, from my point of view, I think we make it even better. So
No, 100%. Absolutely. Like, diversity of motorsport is what makes it exciting. Like people coming from different experiences, different paths, that's what makes it enjoyable.
could not agree more. Yeah. So yeah, there is a lot of work to be done there, I think.
No, definitely. And I think the onus is also on the rest of us fans as well. The way that we speak up about We Race As One, which is super important, we also need to speak up about accessibility as well.
That's right. So Jackie Stewart, his wife has dementia and
Yeah.
he's got that initiative. There's a lot of things that they could use to build on to
Absolutely.
actually bring this to the forefront. But it's just like a tick a box, flick it off, say that it's done, and then yeah,
It's
we've
like,
done our job.
we've given you this small
That's as far
space. And yeah, that's
as
it.
that's
We've
it.
given you the small space that you guys need. There you go. We hope you're happy. We'll see you next year.
We've given you something that you asked for,
Yeah.
but and I think that's what really disappointed me is that,
Yeah.
like I said, they've had 12 months to plan for this. They would have known,
Absolutely.
sold out. Like the Grand Prix was sold out. They would have known that demand for accessible spots would have been more than a 2x2 square.
There definitely needs to be more planning, more thought, and I think just more money invested into it. They need to put the money into it now.
Yep, they do. They do. Absolutely. And, whether they put more money into that by by hiring people with disability to consult on their behalf. I don't know what needs to be done, but I know something needs to be done. And if anyone's listening, I'm here, I'm available, I'm ready to
Absolutely.
help. So.
Please go and talk to Rachel because the information that she gives out, no, it's so helpful. And I think for me as an able-bodied person, it also opened my eyes so much, and I really appreciate that.
Yeah, thank you. And I have had a lot of feedback saying that. So it's really nice to know that it is getting out there, that people are listening.
And hopefully, very soon, we will see a lot more GPs being a lot more accessible.
Yeah, that would be amazing. And again, there are going to be, the odd few where it's going to take time. But yeah, if we can get the ball rolling now, the sooner the better.
Just let's start putting the effort in. Let's see things starting to move in the right direction.
Yeah, absolutely. 100%. We just need to get it out there. Just keep it going. And I guess that's what my page is about, just trying to get it out there, networking, connecting with these people that have influence in the motorsport community, because it is a shame to think that somebody might miss out on that. So.
No, definitely. Right, shall we dive in to the Australian Grand Prix, which I am very jealous you were
Absolutely.
there for because I've never been to a Grand Prix.
You haven't been to a Grand
And
Prix. Oh,
no,
wow.
so I live vicariously through everyone that I follow when they go to a Grand Prix.
Oh, no.
I
Okay,
know.
we're gonna start a campaign to get you to a Grand Prix.
I'm hoping. I Silverstone and Monza, like top of my list.
Yeah,
So hopefully,
absolutely.
I'm hoping so. I really want to go with my sister, but. Your
Oh,
favorite driver ended up winning the Australian Grand Prix.
oh. He did. It was absolutely amazing. It was one of the best experiences of my life. And honestly, yeah, just
I was chuffed. I
the
was so chuffed for
atmosphere.
you.
I know. Thank you.
He's not had great luck at the Australian Grand Prix for the past 2 years. And then
No.
appendicitis in the last race. You must have been slightly worried that he wasn't going to make it to ours.
Do you know what? Every single person said to me, Carlos is not going to be in Australia. And I said, 100% he will be. He will push for that win. He will push for that drive, not only because, he wanted to prove himself as an athlete, but I also think retribution for last year. He had so much to prove.
Absolutely. But I agree with you though. I thought that he was going to make it to Australia. I was like, he's at least going to try and do FP1 and FP2, right, and see if he feels up to it. But I don't think he's going to miss it because Alex Albon had a quite a quick turnaround after he had his surgery as well.
He did, that's right. And the other thing with Alex was that you've got to remember he had complications coming out of his anesthesia.
Yes, he was in
So
ICU, wasn't he?
he absolutely was. So he probably took a while longer to recover than Carlos did.
Whereas
So
Carlos was back in the paddock the next day.
that's right. And I think that's when it sort of twigged for me, like, oh, yeah, no, he's going to be in Australia. He's definitely going to be there. And I guess from like a disability perspective too, like major kudos to Carlos because, like I know how difficult it is for me to get out of bed in the morning. So for him to be able to get up to maintain that fitness, that's amazing.
That's insane. Yeah,
So
honestly. And to
pleased
win
for
a
him.
race, like, who does that 2 weeks post-surgery?
And let me tell you, it was hot. It was, I don't know how he did it. Like he must have been 100%, gone from 100%. Like, well, he wasn't even 100%. He said
No.
himself, his energy must have just been
Energy and
so low.
adrenaline.
That's
Oh.
right. Like it looked like he struggled getting out of the car when he,
Yeah. It
pulled out
wasn't
of the
like
park.
we've seen drivers jump out of the car when they win. And I feel like Carlos is one of those drivers, especially because he hasn't got loads and loads under his belt, right? He was going to be a driver that would want to flat out celebrate it. But I looked at him getting out of the car. I was like, someone please help him, please.
I know he slid out of the car, and I was like, oh, I feel you, Carlos. I know what it's like.
And I
So,
was like, the adrenaline flat out went from his body at that point. He was like, nope, I'm out. The rest of the race, though, right? I gotta be honest, watching at home, didn't feel like there was much on-track action. And I don't know whether it was different from watching it live, but yeah, on screen, it seemed quite quiet.
I have seen a few people say that it was quite a boring race, but like you say, I don't know if it's just being there live. It
Yeah.
was,
Like the
it was,
atmosphere.
yeah, I think it was one of the better races, especially because, we've got commentary coming through live. You see everything that happens. Like there were quite a few struggles when you think about like the Oscar and Lando with the changing positions.
Yes, that did not go down well, did it?
No, it didn't. Not with Australian fans at all.
No, didn't go down
Not
well in
happy
my
with the
house
design.
either, don't worry.
And I get it. You know, I get
No,
Lando
of
at the end of the
course.
day probably had the better position. But yeah,
Yeah.
I think Australia was banking on that. And
Podium
especially the
Oscar.
podium, the shoey, because Oscar was going to
Yes.
do the shoey. So.
His time's going to come, though. He's a driver that's going to have a lot of podiums and a lot of wins under his belt.
Absolutely. Yep, he will. He'll get that shoey on the podium.
The support for Daniel and Oscar there in Australia,
Yes.
what's it like? Because for a long time, Daniel was the only Australian driver on the grid and was driving with Red Bull for a good time. He's in AlphaTauri or RB now. Gosh, I keep getting the name wrong. VCarb, that's the word. He's with VCarb now. Didn't score any points, but then you have Oscar right at the top of the field right now in the McLaren, scoring points in the top five.
So we actually sat on the main straight, and I can 100% tell you that every single time Daniel Ricciardo went past, that crowd got up to their feet. They were clapping.
I love it.
During qualifying, when we found out that he had lost that lap, I think the whole crowd was ready to riot. That
Oh
was,
no.
yeah. So, I mean, there was so much love for Oscar, you know, like new kid on the block. He's, you know, it's his hometown. He's from Victoria, from Melbourne, you know, born and bred just down the street. So there was a lot of support for him, but I still think Daniel Ricciardo has got a lot of support behind him. You know, every time that car came into pit lane, people were cheering their heads off. Yeah,
I
it's
love
really
it.
surreal, you know, even just like when he walked past on Melbourne Walk, just like the screams, like, you know, it makes your ears bleed. It's, you know,
Oh,
there
that's
was a lot of
amazing.
there was a lot of support for Oscar, but you know, Daniel's still popular. I don't think there will ever come a point where he won't be.
No, I was going to say, I think even whenever he opts to retire, he's probably going to be around the Australian GP still. And I think people are still going to go crazy for him because he's got that personality at the end of the day.
Yeah, exactly. He does. You know, and he's just a genuinely kind, nice guy, and like his smile, it just makes you want to smile. So,
I love that. Your thoughts on the Mercedes double DNF? Because
Oh,
this was a
yep.
race to forget for that team.
It really was. Look, what can you say? I guess you've got to be disappointed for them. Lewis is obviously struggling with his car. He's made that,
Definitely.
you know, made that
Abundantly
known.
clear.
Absolutely, yeah. It was disappointing, but I think again, you know, it adds another element to the race. It's like Max has dropped out and then Lewis has dropped out, and like there was a change at the lead, you know, was it going to be Carlos? Was it going to be Charles? Who's going to win? You know, Lando was up there for quite a long time. Alonso at one point, I think, was even. So yeah, no, I feel for George. Honestly, feel for George.
Oh, it's absolutely horrific, that crash.
It was. And to hear him call for that red flag, I honestly don't know what they were thinking. Virtual safety car, just, I don't know,
Something. We
that does
needed
that
some
like even if it was a, you know, yellow flag, not just the virtual
feel
safety car,
safety.
that
You needed
was.
something. I know I saw someone say that I think the gap between where George was and where Lance was on the track was big enough that Lance's race engineer could get on the radio and be like, you really, really need to be careful coming up to this specific corner, which is why potentially the FIA opted not to throw a red flag or anything. But hearing George's radio, absolutely awful. My heart went out
It
for him.
was. And it's again, I think it's almost like Carlos in Japan. You know how he said he just held his breath?
Yes. Oh my gosh, yes.
Because you don't know what's coming behind you. And
Well,
even a 12-second gap,
it's quicker
you
than
don't know
F1
what's
car.
going to happen. Exactly. You know, like, I don't know, Stroll gets a second wind or, you know, something else happens. You just don't
It's
know
true,
what's
yeah.
coming.
Absolutely a race to forget for George Russell.
Absolutely.
And for
And
Mercedes.
with all the other controversy George has had through this week, like, it's
Oh
probably the
gosh,
last thing that
yes.
he wanted, you know, like, just let
Just
me have a
let
one
me
day
get
of
through the
peace.
race.
Exactly. But I'm glad that he was out of the car, and biggest cheer from the crowd as
Oh
soon as we saw
gosh.
him walking back. Yeah,
I think
that was so.
that's it, because you do hold your breath a bit, because it's like, are they okay? Like, they might have been down the radio, but are they 100% okay going out of the car now?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's like Okay, Carlos is going to win the race. Yay. But yeah, make sure George is okay on top of that.
So I don't know how much you saw as well at the race, but Kick Sauber's pit stops were
Yes.
something.
Not good. So, like,
My gosh.
that Valtteri pit stop, that was horrendous.
Oh my
Just, I
gosh.
think the whole row that we were sitting in, they were just holding their breath. It was like, what is happening? What is going on
It's
with
so
that? You know,
bad.
it's like you pull the nut out, you put the tire on, you go.
It's not
You don't.
hard, guys. I mean, don't get me
No.
wrong, I couldn't do it.
Isn't that what they practice for?
Legit. But yeah,
Yeah.
apparently, I think Ted was saying over commentary that they've got a known issue with the thread bearing on the wheel nuts, and that's what's causing them to have these super, super long pit stops. Where I'm like, you guys need to sort that out because your drivers are sort of making progress and probably wishing that they didn't have to pit because the minute they do, they're in 20th and 2 laps behind everyone.
That's right. And you know, like Valtteri could have been in the points. That's
Yes.
the difference between, you know, top 10 and bottom 10,
Yeah.
I guess.
Kickside also got fined because of that pit stop.
Oh, did they? I didn't
There was
know
a
that.
the wheel nut went rolling down the pit lane and was a safety issue.
Wow,
So
absolutely.
it went
Yeah,
from bad to worse.
they need to get their stuff together, don't
They
they?
really
Like,
do. Oh, it's
oh, like
bad.
I do think they have potential to be a really good team, but they just haven't
I
found
do.
their mojo yet, I guess.
And in that backfield as well, like the difference between 1 point, it's a lot, you know.
It
Valtteri
is.
potentially being in the points to then getting nothing. I'm like, it's not going to be a challenge to see who's going to be in 10th place if it carries on like this.
No, that's right. And I think the thing we really need to look out for is silly season at the end of this
Oh
year,
my
because with a
gosh,
lot of
yeah.
drivers off contract, it's going to be crazy.
What are your thoughts on the rest of the season? We're 3 races in. We've gone to a couple of different types of circuits now. What do you think is going to happen?
Oh, look, can't discredit Ferrari at all. I think they're
No.
going to be hungry for a lot of wins. I think they're definitely going to throw it down to Max. But you know, I think that's good. Like, I respect Max as a driver. I
Yeah,
think
yeah.
if you have the potential to be able to win those races, you know, good for you. Like, he puts everything into it. He gets maximum out of it. And I think that's been a hard lesson for Ferrari to learn.
Yeah, definitely. Especially with what their form has been in recent years. But it feels like this year, it's like you said, it looks like the tide is changing a little bit for them.
Yeah, like you need to get over this 1-2 driver mentality and
Yeah, I
think
think that's the main thing.
outside the square. I've got to say I'm a bit disappointed with McLaren, but I dare say they'll, you know, come good
Yeah.
when they come good. You know, mid-year is usually a good spot for them.
Wait till around the British Grand Prix, I would say.
Yeah.
That'll be fine then, but I was expecting more as well.
Yeah, you've got to think Lando's got to get a win at some point. Like
Yeah.
he's But then it's also like, is he just letting the pressure get to him too much instead of
Yeah.
just driving? You know, like we know he's got that in him. So fingers crossed for that. As for the back markers, like, you know, Alpine's been a bit disappointing, haven't they?
It's not been great, has it?
No, it hasn't. For Haas to come up to where they
And beat
are,
them,
credit
yeah.
to them. Yeah. So I think it's going to be a real mixed bag. I hope it is a mixed bag. You know, as much as Max deserves what he's got, it would be nice to have, you know, a few different wins in there, a few Carlos wins. That would be
That would
great.
be brilliant. We wouldn't complain about that one bit.
No, can't complain about that. But yeah, just look, good health, good safety to all of them. Yeah, hopefully this is a turning point.
Let's got our fingers crossed for a bit more of a competitive season. So hopefully we'll get a couple of new Grand Prix winners this year. Do you think we'll get any brand new Grand Prix winners? Someone that hasn't won a race at all yet?
You know what? I think we will. Yeah, I do
I
think we
hope
will.
so.
Yeah.
Lando and Oscar are probably top of my list.
Yeah, agree. Have to agree. It's either going to be Lando or it's going to be Oscar. And I think it's probably going to be somewhere we don't expect, like Monaco or something like that.
Ooh, that would be
Yeah, that's my hot
interesting.
tip. Lando to win Monaco.
Oh, see, I'm waiting for Charles to win his home Grand Prix so badly. I'm holding out hope. There's got to be a year he does it.
Sorry, I just feel like the curse has got him.
It really does. I feel like we're going to end up seeing Carlos win Monaco. Lewis is going to join Ferrari next year, and he's going to end up winning Monaco.
And then
The
like
cycle will just continue, won't it?
Exactly. Maybe last year of his career, like,
Oh, that would be nice.
yeah, at
A
some
good
point he has to
byproduct.
win it, doesn't he?
Oh, you would hope so. I mean, he's finished the GP now because I think last year was the first year he actually managed to finish the entire Grand Prix.
That
So
was
that's
nice.
something. Yeah.
Yeah,
So we're baby
exactly.
steps.
It is nice to think about every driver, winning their home Grand Prix, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
Especially on the weekend. Like, there was so much hype over Oscar winning the Australian Grand Prix. It was just,
Yeah.
it was ridiculous. So it's the
There's
same thing. Charles winning Monaco, Lando,
yeah.
Silverstone, Carlos
Yeah.
in Spain.
Yeah, no, 100%. Because I think as much as the drivers kind of try and temper expectations, like I know Oscar during press cons was like, no, the best we could hope for is fifth as a team. It's not really going to happen. But there's got to be that part inside you when you go to your home GP that's like, maybe, just maybe some magic could happen.
And I do think in the future we probably will see Oscar win an Australian Grand Prix at some
Oh,
point.
absolutely. I
So,
think he's going to be one of those drivers that's a multiple world championship winner.
yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
He's got that work ethic behind him.
He does. And he's calm, like he's got such
Yes.
a calm demeanor. He's so different from the other drivers. But I think
He's.
that's a good thing.
No, definitely. Because he's what, 22?
I think so. I believe so. Yeah.
That's insane. Like, I
It
was coming out of uni at 22 and definitely was not calm. Definitely
No,
was not calm at all.
I can't say I was calm at 22, but I suppose you have to be when you work in that kind of environment,
Yeah, I
not
think you
knowing where you're
succeed in
going to
it.
be. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, but I feel like, yeah, he's going to be one of those drivers that just absolutely flies in Formula One. I think when he has the car as well.
Yeah, watch this space.
Yes, he's a driver I'm so excited to see the future of.
Yeah, my son is a huge Oscar fan, so
Love that. Finally, before we finish off, silly
absolutely.
season, which you
Yes.
touched upon before. What do you think is going to happen?
Look, you've kind of, like with this news about Daniel having the ultimatum and possibly Liam Lawson stepping up, he's proved that he can get results.
Oh,
So I.
absolutely. In a very short amount of time.
Exactly. That's, from a team point of view, you've got to think that might be a smart
Yeah.
move on their part. Mercedes, I think Mercedes is going to be the dark horse.
You think so?
I do. I think they're going to keep us guessing right up till the last second. Like you've got
Winter break,
Kimi
sort of.
and Ollie, and then it's like, is it going to be Carlos? Is Max going to leave Red Bull and go to Mercedes?
I
You
love
just
this
don't
series so
know.
much.
I know. It's ridiculous, isn't it?
Crazy. I think Mercedes' problem as well is that the seat isn't as coveted as it was when they were dominating. Like, chunk if Lewis had left 2019, very, very different story. I think a lot of people would have wanted that seat more. But seeing the way they're performing at the moment, I don't know how many drivers. Like, I look at Carlos, right? I don't think he's necessarily going to be looking at the Mercedes seat.
No, and I don't think I'd want him to look at the
No,
Mercedes seat
God,
either.
no.
Like you
No, no.
don't want to step into a seven-time world champion's,
See, yeah, and
shoes,
team.
do you? You
Yeah.
don't. And then to step into that, and if he does underperform in a team like Mercedes, that would just be heartbreaking.
Because I honestly have a gut feeling, right, that Carlos is going to go to Red Bull.
Yep. I've been saying that all along, and everyone has said to
I'm
me,
so glad.
no, Carlos Senior and Jos, they don't get on.
Like that
Carlos can't go
bad.
to, I'm like, no. I think Max and Carlos would actually complement each other
Yes.
really well as co-drivers.
I'm so glad because me and my sister have been saying the same thing, and I've seen no theories, like all the F1 pages and everything. No one mentions him going to Red Bull. After the Australian Grand Prix, they did. And I was like, thank you for seeing what I have seen.
Yeah,
Because
100%. No.
he was in Toro Rosso and Max when he started out his
He
career.
was. Yep.
So
Yep,
it would
absolutely.
make sense.
And I don't know, I followed Carlos's career for a long time, and I
Yeah.
just feel like he's finally at that point where he's letting Carlos drive for Carlos. He's not letting himself
Yes.
drive for any other reason
Not for
but
the
to prove.
team, yeah.
That's right. No, like he puts the hard work in. He knows what the strategies are. He's
Yes, yeah.
a really good driver, but he's living under the shadow of his father. He's got all this
Yeah.
stuff going on around him with Charles, like the team, Lewis coming in.
It's a
I just think he
lot.
needs to, that's right, he just needs to put his foot down and let his driving speak for him.
And it did. And once Australia absolutely saw that happen.
Yeah, that was, you've got to say, that was flawless,
Oh,
like right
no,
down to the
100%.
right down to the last few laps, it was didn't put a foot wrong. So
well controlled, so composed, and yeah, took home the win, no problem. And Ferrari got a 1-2. I mean, what more could you want?
That's right. And you know, after a drive like Singapore, just what can you say?
Definitely think they're going to be signing him to Red Bull. I think they'd be stupid not to.
Agreed. Yeah, 100% agreed.
Because realistically, who else do you put in the seat?
Well, that's the thing. Who do you put in the seat? You know, like you've got, you'd have to think someone like Ollie Bearman is going to probably step up at some point too. You know, there could be a Haas seat there for him.
I think I am definitely of the opinion Haas are taking him in 2025. Mm-hmm. One of those drivers in Haas is going to be going.
Yeah. And especially if you believe that Audi are hunting Hülkenberg.
Yes, they are. Teo Pocher in Super Formula really wants the seat in stake or kicks out or whatever.
Yeah, absolutely. It's like, but then, you know, there's talk of Carlos signing with Audi from 2026.
Because obviously his dad has a link with Audi as well.
Absolutely. But then, I don't know, like for Carlos to go to Red Bull makes a lot more sense than for him to start over again with Audi, especially being this close potentially to the end of his career. Like,
this is what I was thinking, right? When people kept saying, oh, he's going to go to Audi, I'm like, we have no guarantee Audi's going to be a good team. Like, I hope they are. I hope they're competitive.
Yeah. Yep.
And he's turning 30 this year, right?
That's right.
I don't think he's going to have 10, 20 years left in him at this point.
No.
And if Red Bull were to offer you a seat when they're dominating the way they are, that is your best chance of taking a WDC.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely it is. Especially because, you know, Max has stated time and time again that if he gets to a point where he's dominant for so long and it gets too boring, that he will step away. You know, for Carlos to step into a number one drive, that would, you know,
insane.
Like he's probably got a few, you know, maybe 5-6 more years left in him. I definitely think, and people have written him off at this point, but I do think he has potential for, you know, a championship. 100%.
I'm very surprised people would write him off because he's never been a bad driver. He's never been just a mediocre driver either.
No, he hasn't. But that seems to be consensus at the moment that he's just mid.
Very surprised. I think Ferrari signing Lewis wasn't so much that they didn't want Carlos, but they really wanted Lewis.
Yeah. Yeah, and you'd have to think at this point Lewis will see out the end of his career at Ferrari. So
100%. 100%, I think. You know, he's got that childhood dream now. He's going to get to live it out in a car that looks a lot better than the Mercedes car.
That's right. Yeah, and knowing that he's, you know, seeing Carlos achieve this in the car that they have now, that's probably a smart move from him too.
100%, because I was reading his post-race interviews after he DNF'd and he was like, oh no, I'm still like quite positive. And in my head, I was like, you're positive because the team you're moving to next year just got a 1-2.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, exactly. I've got to say, bringing Fred into Ferrari has been, you know, it's a genius move. Like they have a game plan. They definitely know what they're doing.
They feel like a serious team again, don't they? It feels put together.
They do.
It feels like they've got a direction and a vision.
Yeah. I just, you know, again, I just think they need to get over this 1-2 driver and just, you know, let their drivers drive.
Yeah. And I think it's with a lot of teams. I think Ferrari, we hear a lot about it because of the team radios that get aired, but a lot of teams have this first driver, second driver mentality. And I'm like, that's fine if there's a big disparity between your drivers. With Carlos and Charles, they're both very, very strong drivers who are very evenly matched. You can't have a 1-2 there.
No, you can't. You've got to be working towards a team goal.
Yeah. And it's like, you know what? If you can overtake safely and you're not going to cost the team points by bumping into each other, go and race and fight it out on track.
Yeah, there was a lot of commentary on the weekend about how even though Carlos won the Singapore race and Charles didn't win anything last year, that Charles was still the number one driver. And I just thought, just the fact that Carlos won the Australian Grand Prix and actually, you know, made them eat humble pie was so nice.
Yeah.
It's like, just stop comparing them, stop pitting them against one another.
Because they seem to get along.
They do, exactly. It was really nice even at the end for Carlos to say, you know, tell Charles to come close to me. We'll celebrate this together. You know, like.
That was beautiful. I was like, nearly crying hearing that radio.
Yeah. I don't know. I guess it's going to be, we'll find out at the end of the year, but it's going to be a mad one, I think.
It's going to be insane, but I'm so excited for it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Living for the chaos.
We'll have to get back together and have another chat.
Oh, definitely. Regroup.
Absolutely.
dissect every single team and be like, what's going on then?
Absolutely.
Thank you so much for coming on to the podcast today, though. It's been amazing having you on.
Thank you so much for having me.
No, it's been brilliant. And if you guys aren't following Rachel yet, I'm going to have the link to her Instagram down in my bio and in my show notes. So please, please go give her a follow and drop her a message as long as she doesn't mind having your messages.
No, not at all. Nope.
You know,
come into my inbox, have a chat, stay.
She is an absolutely lovely person to have a chat to. And honestly, just looking through the Instagram, I've learned so much. So go and give her Instagram a follow.
Oh, thank you so much. That's so kind of you to say.
Thank you guys so much for watching. Make sure you follow this podcast if you want to get updates whenever I post. And I will see you guys the next time you're summoned to the steward's office.